Now, talking of sort of exciting science, Helen, what have you been looking at in the news this week for us?
Christmas is coming, as we've all noticed, and I suspect that there'll be lots of movies watched over the Christmas period. And perhaps one of your favourites, certainly one of mine, is Finding Nemo. And the fact is that now scientists have uncovered the fact that one in six species featured in the Finding Nemo movie are at risk of disappearing from the oceans, and that's due mainly to overfishing. So really, the chances are that you're not going to find Nemo if you actually went and looked for him yourself. A research team from Simon Fraser University and from the World Conservation Union, the IUCN, they examined the extinction risk facing over 1,500 marine species. Okay, so there weren't 1,500 species in Finding Nemo. What they did was they took the families that you can see on screen and examined all the species in those families. And that included things like hammerhead sharks, sea turtles, pelicans, pufferfish, eagle rays and seahorses. Hooray for seahorses. So the information they gathered came from the IUCN's Red List assessments. And this essentially ranks the extinction risk ranging from critically endangered through endangered, vulnerable and near threatened of various different species. And these categories are all based on a very detailed set of standards against which the size of populations and the changes they've undergone are gauged. And if there's not enough information, then these factors, then basically a species is labelled as data deficient. What they found was that 12 to 35% of the species they looked at were considered to be threatened with extinction. That's ranging from critically endangered through to vulnerable. And to be honest, the point of this study isn't really to see if Hollywood has got anything to say about extinction in the oceans. It's more about assessing how well these famous charismatic species that are getting, you know, attention from us, you know, how are they getting on both in terms of their status in the wild and our efforts to protect them? Because frankly, if we can't figure out conserving these glamorous animals like sharks and turtles, what hope is there for the lesser known species that don't make it onto the silver screen and that few of us have actually heard of?
Isn't it quite good that Hollywood does champion some of these species, because then at least people have heard of them and then they feel they have a sort of stake in their welfare, really?
Absolutely. I do. I love the fact that even any vaguely recognisable marine species makes itself that well known. But the point they're making is there's an awful lot that we don't really hear about. And how are these famous species getting on? And in fact, not so well, it seems. I mean, there are actually a real lack of binding conservation steps being taken for these charismatic species that we've heard of. For example, on things like the Convention on Trade, International Trade in Endangered Species, there are lots of species of sharks that, for example, aren't being managed at a global scale, which is what we need, because they're seeing these global problems and we need global efforts to try and protect them. But I have to say, it's not all doom and gloom. Public awareness... although it doesn't always come hand in hand with conservation, one problem was when Finding Nemo came out, people rushed out to go and buy their own Nemos, sometimes taken unsustainably from the oceans. And then a bunch of other people, kids mostly, flushed their Nemos down the toilet to set them free. So that wasn't great. But, you know, on the whole, we are seeing, as you say, Chris, we are seeing more of the oceans in the media. We're seeing them on the screen. We're seeing them in cartoons and so on. And that's helping to spread the word of some place that otherwise is out of sight and out of mind.
One important thing, because it's very easy to focus on, I suppose, the exotic things, but there are also more, I hate to use the word mundane, but there are more sort of everyday type fish that we just exploit for food, like mackerel and herring things. There were some fishermen who got themselves in hot water in Shetland recently for overfishing their quotas. How do they set those quotas? So when the government or the EU say, right, you're going to be allowed to fish X amount out of the ocean, what science is informing how they set those limits?
It's a very good question. In fact, a new set of quotas is just coming out for the EU. It's the whole way that the fishery is managed, and it's looking like what the fishermen are now going to get is fewer days at sea with slightly larger quotas. It should be based on science. It begins with science, it ends up with a policy, and there's a long way in between those two things. But if we're looking just at the science, it's about how many fish are in the ocean still, how they're reproducing, how many young there are. It's understanding how the population is doing, essentially. How are they dealing with us taking a whole bunch of them out and replacing themselves? So to get that information, you need to do stock assessments. You can do that all sorts of ways, by counting the fish we do fish, by actually sending down sonar. And there's ways of actually sort of imaging and figuring out how many fish there are in the oceans. We can't count them all. We've got to make estimates and then sort of add it up from small samples here and there. It's not perfect, but it's what we've got. And it's not always legal, and people go and break those quotas. And that's what's been happening in Shetland.